Fred Film Radio.
Angela Cherby, Fred Film Radio from the Lovers Film Festival in Turin. I'm here with RSX this afternoon.
Hi, Angela. Good to be here.
You are here at the festival after 23 years was the first time, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's been a long time, and I'm an old man now.
Well, we all are older. Let's say older, not old. Older man. You were here 23 years ago. Your film career is mainly based on LGBT stories. I mean, not all your films are, but many of them are, actually. And over this lap of time, how do you feel that the perception of gay movies has changed, and if it's easier to make a gay film or more difficult, and which has been the evolution, if there was any?
You know, I think that the thing is, it's still down to the individual. I think there's larger movements that you can look at in terms of what kind of gay cinema gets made, but I don't think it's any easier for an individual artist or filmmaker to sustain a career. There's no Pasolini, there's no Fassbender, there's no one making 30 and 40 films the way they're used to, and the economics of just getting by as a narrative feature filmmaker have meant a lot of my colleagues and people from my generation have gone to television because it's more possible. The thing that I always try to remember is actually I think about my first film, The Delta, and that no one gave me permission to make that film, and I feel the same way now when I made Keep the Lights On, which was maybe 15 years later. I had to kind of remember the kind of risks I took, and also the chance I took that no one said you have the right to make this movie. I said I just have to tell the story, and I think it's the same now.
Yeah. So it's just based on an urgency of telling something that cannot wait anymore.
There's still a lack of economic value to our queer stories, and so you have to find value in other ways. I run an LGBT arts nonprofit that I founded called Queer Art. And we support artists in a bunch of different artistic fields. And one of the things I notice is that the 75-year-old lesbian experimental filmmaker has it no easier than the 22-year-old who's just starting out in terms of figuring out how to economically survive as an artist. But collectively, we can encourage each other to make the work that's most personal for them.
Well, this is actually strange because, you know, the perception of the LGBT issues worldwide in the last 25 years have changed a lot.
Yes.
We are much more visible,
yes,
much more in your face. We're
yes.
much. I mean, the social issues are treated in a better way in most of the countries.
Except in Italy.
Well, this is why I said in most of the countries. And why do you think that the industry cannot see this?
You know, I think that's a lot to do with television, to be honest. I think that television has become a place where people go to look for their own stories, and they're more personal. And I think there's more diversity on television than there is in the cinemas.
Mm-hmm.
And so
there's more money in television.
And then there's a way in which globalization has meant that whether you're gay or straight or queer or white or black, there's like everybody is just sold this one thing, which is a Marvel movie or a superhero movie. So there's a commonality to people looking to movies these days to escape and not to identify. So on the other hand, I think you know, for me, I make films because I want to share the things I've observed, and I still make films in a very personal way. And I think that's what when I talk to younger filmmakers, I'm like, you do it because you have to do it.
Actually, my question was about this. You are, as all screenwriters and director, you observe. You are an outside observer of life of the world. What makes you click to say you to yourself, okay, this is what I want to talk about?
It's a good question. I think for me, it's when I sense that some story, and that means usually a beginning, middle, and end, I can feel the whole arc of a film, I think will be fascinating to me at this moment and will continue to be for the next couple of years. And also I can imagine that there will be an audience who will relate to the story I'm telling. There's a moment where the shape of the film seems both utterly mine and something that other people will also find a connection to.
And this was like the very beginning, or is this something that you elaborated during the years?
I've never lacked clarity around once I've decided to make a film, and that comes from, you know, I was a Montessori kid. Okay. And in some ways, I think I've always been able to kind of make my own Montessori. You work at your own pace. You finish your own projects. So I sort of think that way around film. Like, I have an idea, I believe in it, and I carry it on.
I wanted to talk about the film that you did with Alfred Molina, because it was a good breakthrough for an old gaze in on screen, which are not very well represented or not represented at all. How did you come up with this story? Was it something that you knew already that actually happened, or you just made it up?
I had read about a case about a music teacher in the Midwest in the States who had gotten married to his longtime partner and lost his job, and I thought that that was a compelling story. I was also, there was a film called Make Way for Tomorrow, which is a Leo McCarey 1930s comedy, American comedy, about an old couple who gets separated from each other and has to go live with their children. And I thought that those two stories together, I can imagine really working. And I think that then I had a plot for Love is Strange, which is an old couple needs to be separated. Why? Because one of them gets married to his partner. So there was these two things that converged. And then I had the benefit of working with John Lithgow and Alfred Molina, who actually had been friends for 25 years. So they had a relationship that was kind of built in to their work together on the movie.
And when you work with actors of that leverage, how strong is your power as a film director? I mean, in terms of, are you using them only on screen or also outside of the screen in terms of helping you to build up the characters with them or this kind of work?
Well, whether someone's famous or not, I tend to work with them somewhat similarly, which is I try to cast people as, to some extent, to play a version of themselves. I'm not really interested in transformation when it comes to film acting. So in that way, the character doesn't exist before the actor inhabits them. And a lot of what I'm trying to do is give people the right environment to reveal themselves without having to think about it. And so I do that by really building the world that they live in the movie fully. So they don't have to imagine that they're teaching a bunch of kids in New York City about music, because they are. Everything is pretty much as is on the set. It's almost, there's very little fantasy on the set, and I think that allows actors to be themselves.
When you did the Keep the Lights On, which was here at the Torino Festival years ago, and it was like it's a kind of a love story. I mean, not a kind. It is a love story, but it's like a gay community love story, because the gay love stories are very often more complicated because there are external issues like drugs coming in. And drugs in the gay community is a huge issue now, especially in the last like 5 to 7 years. What is your thought about? Which are your thoughts about that? Why do you think that we as a community are so prone to be self-destructive sometimes?
Well, and by the way, I think all love stories have conflict. So something has to intrude, whether it be cancer or another woman or, you know, or another man, or, you know, there's always got to be something that creates the drama. I think that for me, Keep the Lights On is really about the closet, and the closet is a bit different than maybe how it's traditionally used. To me, it's not the closet of just whether you've told people that you're gay or you've shared that knowledge. It's really the closet that gay people like myself and my generation had to form in order to protect ourselves from the outside, because the outside was violent and the outside wanted to hurt us, and the outside judged us, and there was shame. And so I think because of that, there were sort of environments, whether it be environments around drugs or sex, that we created in order to feel safe. And then they held on to us. So okay. The darkness was... So I feel like I came out when I was 16 in high school. Mm-hmm. But I think in some ways, from the first day that I was in a sexual relationship in my teens until I was in my late 30s, I was in some form of a closet. And the film is about that. Like, these two characters are out, at least in,
yeah,
most, in most of the
formally
film. They're formally out, but they have so much to hide. And I think for gay people, people in general, it's an important moment when you stop hiding.
I totally agree. And which leads me to another question about the World Pride celebration of New York this year. Yeah. It's 50 years from Stonewall. The community has grown a lot, and we opened a lot. We became hyper visible, and now there is kind of a downfall from that. So, why is still important to fight, and we still have to fight to establish ourselves as a community outside in the let's call it normal world, even if it's a word, it's a dreadful kind of saying it. Why do you think we are still after 50 years in this, or we are going back to a bad place?
Yeah, those are big questions, which have to do with they're different depending on what country you're in. I think it's, you know, we're sort of laughing that Italy is going backwards. Here we are, we're smiling. But it's really painful to observe it and to see, to see that there is an increased repression and that there's a lack of visibility, that the festival has the challenges it does in terms of support, and that the laws are stacked against LGBT people in this country. Like, these issues are really, really serious, and they demand courage to fight.
But normally, sometimes they are like a way of hiding a lack of capability in running a country. You know, you don't know what to do. You're trying to point the finger somewhere else.
You know, so during the Obama years, where there was a sense in general, I think a lot of the world, that things were moving, and there was no extremely big war going on. There was this sense of like global conflict was, I mean, I'm not saying Obama was the cause of this kind of period of peace, no. but it was a representation,
exactly,
of a progressive hopes, and we sort of thought we were moving in one direction, and I think we see that we've had, and during those years I used to think like, oh, Fassbender, meaning Rainer Werner Fassbender, was wrong. Human nature is not as cruel as he depicted it, and he depicted it right after the Holocaust, so it makes sense but you know, maybe he's wrong, maybe people aren't so violent or animalistic. And then And then the last 5 years, I've thought, oh, Fassbender knew best. That people want to dominate each other, that they want to hurt each other, that they want to feel power by inflicting pain, and by. So, it's interesting as a filmmaker, as an artist, is when you see these flips in perception, how do you face them in your own work?
And how do you feel compelled by this? I mean, do you think that we still need gay films in order to be militant? And
well, we need gay films because we want gay films because we want to tell our stories, and I think individual stories are always the most vibrant to an audience, and there's a lot of gay queer experience. I think, you know, it's interesting because my first 20 years of filmmaking sort of paralleled that closet I was talking about. And I think that the films had a lot of pain in them. And the last 10 years of my life have been very different. And the films, the struggles that the characters face are usually more external struggles. So I try to make work that seems honest to how I'm living in a certain moment. I don't know how to address, you know, I mean, I get in these conversations. I don't know how to address the bleakness of this moment politically in my own work. I don't know.
Yeah, because I mean, it's not easy. And then it must be one. I mean, in your court, in your person. I mean, you have to have it in yourself. You cannot build it up if you don't know how to do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I mean, cannot. I think, if you want to send them, there used to be a line, if you want to send a message, then do it by Western Union. Don't do it by a film. Like send a cable, don't make a movie if you have a message to send. And I try not to make message films. But sometimes I feel that I'm also, you know, that I'm a bourgeois person who's trying to avoid my responsibility for how bad things are right now. So there's a question of what is your role and what is your duty as a person morally and artistically.
One last question about your influences. Which were in your career the directors, the film director you were looking up to?
I was very I mentioned Fassbinder when I was young. I think directors like Fassbinder, actually Fellini was a very important. I wrote my senior thesis on Yves Tulloni, and I think a film like that was very meaningful for me. And then French cinema has been just a big part of my imagination. So for directors like Maurice Bialat and Truffaut and Jean Eustache and. Ken Loach was an important filmmaker to me. Satyajit Ray was an important, and I would say for the last 10 years, the most important filmmaker for me has been Ozu. My co-writer Mauricio Zacharias and I sat it in on a festival of Ozu films about 10 years ago, and we haven't stopped watching his movies since then. And I think they are the strongest voice that I'm in conversation with.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much to Ira Sachs for this long conversation he had with us. I'm Angela Cherby for Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.